May it please the court. My name is Chad Johnson. Attorney registration number 41982, and I represent the homeowner appellants in this matter. As the court just mentioned, and the elephant in the room here today appears to be whether or not this court has jurisdiction. That, of course, hinges on whether the trial court's order of dismissal without prejudice is a final appealable order. Looking at the facts that you should analyze in that, the register of actions from the trial court shows that no judgment was entered pursuant to 54A. You'll find that at the record in pleadings 177. No party requested, and the district court did not grant any certification pursuant to 54B. We, of course, have a dismissal without prejudice. And we have the same action that was filed 30 days after that dismissal without prejudice that is now pending in the district court, what I'm going to reference as COAST 2. So
well,
this is, yeah, go ahead.
Stop you there, because COAST 2 is a little puzzling to me, so I'm hoping you can sort of square it away. Is COAST 2 basically COAST 1? Did you fix the mediation issue and then refile, and the same parties, the same lawsuit, the same issues are now going on in COAST 2?
Essentially, Your Honor, while we disagree with the trial court's interpretation, we did comply with that order, sent a request to Visions Council regarding mediation. That is also found in the record. We did not receive a response to that, but per the court's interpretation of the mediation provisions, all that was required is that we send a letter with the magic word mediation to the defendants. We had 30 days, and then we were allowed to refile the case.
But why isn't that just COAST 1, now that you fixed the issue and it was dismissed without prejudice? Why didn't you just continue the same piece of litigation?
The district court held that once we filed a notice of appeal, that it was without any further jurisdiction in the case. And that's what they put that in their denial of the motion for reconsideration, which is also in the record.
So let me ask this then. Why are we here today if you're litigating the exact same case now as COAST 2?
That's an excellent question. And the reason we're here is because based on that dismissal without prejudice, homeowners are going to be prejudiced in COAST 2 and in a remand of COAST 1 because Vision and the other defendants have sought $50,000 in attorney fees in what they argue is a dismissal on the merits in the underlying matter, that this dismissal without prejudice equals that. And additionally, the fact-intensive inquiry whether the statute of limitations or the statute of repose have run on any of the homeowners' claims is going to be affected by that dismissal without prejudice. So it would be in the interest of judicial economy and so that the district court and the parties going forward knew their rights and obligations if this court were to find on the merits that they have jurisdiction and to adjudicate on the merits this mediation provision issue.
Can't the court in the other proceeding determine the attorney's fee issue? That can only be appealed to this court. I mean, won't the issue be resolved in this court eventually if there's an appeal from the second case?
That is most likely true. The trial court held that it was without further jurisdiction to enter any more orders and has stopped.
No, I understand that. But you have another case going, and nobody's contesting jurisdiction in that case. Right?
Correct.
So, and they want to litigate. In that case, are they seeking $50,000 in attorney's fees?
I would say that they are still seeking it in COAST 1.
I see. And you say that?
Because we filed a separate action, it's got a different case number, a different judge assigned.
Are you anticipating they're going to file such a motion, or have they in fact filed such a motion?
They have in fact filed such a motion. It's in the record. It's actually been fully briefed, but the district court has declined to rule on it until this appeal has concluded.
And so what is the precise relief you're asking from this court?
Well, the precise relief is the homeowners would think that it's in the best interest for this court to completely reverse the trial court's dismissal without prejudice. If it would have been done right, it would have eventually been a stay. The stay is moot at this point because mediation provisions have been satisfied. But that would clarify to the district court that there is no possibility of an order of attorney fees, and it would also clarify that the statute of limitations and statute of repose issues relate back to the original filing of COAST 1. We don't have to argue about whether there was any equitable tolling or any other issues between COAST 1 and COAST 2.
Is there some assertion of equitable tolling in the other action?
We haven't been briefing the statute of limitations issue yet. That case is set for trial in March of 2016. Setting aside the jurisdictional issue, however, I do believe, as I was saying, that the district court and the parties and the overall judicial economy would be served if there was an adjudication on the merits here on this appeal. That brings us to the district court's order of dismissal without prejudice, which itself is contradicts itself in some places, and there is more than one reasonable interpretation of that order. Some of the questions that even I have are, did the trial court dismiss based on jurisdictional issues at the trial court level? Did it dismiss based on failure to state a claim? Or did it dismiss pursuant to the CIDAR, Construction Defect Action Reform Act? And to the extent that the district court found it was jurisdictional, well, it's long been the law of Colorado that jurisdiction is constitutional, and that you can't simply deprive a court of jurisdiction based on a private contract. You can find anything on that issue in the record at pleadings 66 and 67. If the district court dismissed pursuant to 12b-5, well, then it certainly erred when it considered hundreds of pages of affidavits and contracts that were not really central to homeowners' claims in any way in dismissing as a matter of law. And then the district court expressly held in a portion of its order that it was dismissing this case based on CIDARA. And as was explained in the briefing, the CIDARA and analogous case law regarding arbitration provisions, that a stay is mandatory and that dismissal without prejudice is reversible error. And furthermore, I'd like to point out in the Shaw Construction decision that is quoted at page 25 of homeowners' opening brief, the division of this court in that case actually went through the CIDARA and interpreted the CIDARA that said that held a civil action may proceed if no offer is made by the builder or if the claimant rejects the builder's offer and no arrangements have been made for mediation. In this case, both homeowners satisfied both those conditions, so the action should have proceeded. But then Shaw Construction also went through the CIDARA and said, and if there's any violation of those provisions, a stay is required.
Excuse me, let me just go back to the jurisdiction question.
Sure.
So the reason why you claim, I just want to make sure I understand, you're saying we have jurisdiction, even though the case was, according to the order, dismissed without prejudice, because the defendants have filed a motion for attorney's fees. Is that right?
Well, the two factual issues of why that there's prejudice if we don't adjudicate this appeal are the attorney fee issue and statute of limitations repose. And what really, from a legal perspective, what worries homeowners is if this this dismissal without prejudice is found as a final appealable order, well, then the homeowners, they might not be able to collaterally attack that order after an attorney fee award or after a potential statute of limitations on jury finding or motion for summary judgment.
So do you want us to find there is jurisdiction? Do we have jurisdiction? Or do you want us to find that we don't have jurisdiction?
Well, jurisdiction, it's for this court. I apologize. I haven't had a chance to really dig into the briefing on this, but I think that the homeowners do want this court to exercise jurisdiction, but would understand under the facts of this case if the court did not. And ultimately, no matter how you read the legal rationale for the district court, the legal rationale, their really underlying basis for their order dismissing the case without prejudice is it's interpretation of the mediation provisions as a condition precedent, and then its factual finding that homeowners had not complied with that provision. And this is a very important issue in Colorado, not only for my clients in this case, but for all builders, fixing flippers, real estate agents, and present and future homeowners, because one of the contracts we're talking about here today is the contract to buy and sell, which is the standard form for transferring real estate here. It's probably the most utilized and most litigated contract in Colorado. And this contract has been around for decades, and with versions of these mediation provisions in there, and not a single trial court, not a single appellate court has ever found these mediation provisions are a condition precedent to litigation. So I submit that homeowners are the appellants here, and we understand our burden, but it's really Vision that is seeking to change Colorado law on this issue. And in doing so, they haven't cited a single binding case in their brief or provided any analogy of one of the contracts in cases from Florida or, or Georgia or California were anything like the contracts we're dealing with in this case. And furthermore, you know, the district court also went and made a factual finding that homeowners had not substantially complied with the mediation provisions, and that basically struck them of all affirmative defenses to the contract claim of vision of these mediation provisions. And that really gets us to Soicher v. State Farm, which a homeowner submitted as supplemental authority, and that in that, Division's court recently ruled that if there's a dispute on whether a condition precedent is satisfied, well, that issue goes to the jury, in citing CRCP 9 for that proposition. And here, in briefing both at the trial level and at the appellate level, plaintiffs have demonstrated at a minimum a trial issue of fact whether they substantially satisfy these mediation provisions, and whether they have other legal reasons for the alleged breach, any legal excuses for that alleged breach.
Mr. Johnson, if that's being litigated in Coates 2, isn't that moot?
If what is being litigated?
If you're litigating actual claims, and, you, and I'm assuming you guys did something with the mediation between 1 and 2, isn't the mediation provision moot now?
Yeah, it's definitely moot. We homeowners requested mediation from Vision and the other defendants, and they multiple times, and they still have not responded, and we still have not had a mediation. They still have not provided any Sidara offer pursuant to the notice of claim process. But they did not raise it in a motion to dismiss in Coates 2, presumably because they even agree now that under the district court's flawed interpretation of mediation provisions, that homeowners have actually satisfied that. If there's no further questions at this time, I'd like to reserve my remaining time for rebuttal.
Great. You have 3 minutes and 21 seconds left.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Clint Coberly. I'm here on behalf of the Defendant Appellees Vision Development Group, Inc., Paradise Hills Castle Pines LLC, and Stephen Gage. My attorney registration number is 38903. As was just discussed, pursuant to the court's order of June 4th, I'd like to address some jurisdictional questions that have been raised in this case, and specifically whether this court has jurisdiction to address the appellant's appeal of the trial court's order. Vision believes that this case and the issues are not ripe for appeal. It is clear from the states, from the statutes and case law, that this court does not have jurisdiction over this matter. CAR 1A1 and CRS 134-1021 are clear in their requirements and permit appeals only from final judgments. The Colorado Supreme Court has held in Brody v. Bott that a final judgment is a jurisdictional prerequisite to review on appeal. This court has also noted in its initial order to show cause that generally a trial court's order of dismissal of a claim without prejudice does not constitute final judgment for purposes of appeal because the factual and legal issues underlying the dispute have not been resolved. Homeowners have argued that the case of Wilmore v. Hagen provides this court with jurisdiction over a dismissal without prejudice for lack of jurisdiction. However, the Wilborn case is both factually and legally distinguishable. In Wilborn, the Court of Appeals discharged a show cause order when the appellant demonstrated, and this court concluded, that the lower court's dismissal without prejudice effectively disposed of the action and prevented further proceedings as effectively as would a final judgment of dismissal. This court went on to further note that it is therefore a final order for purposes of appeal. Here, in contrast, the lower court's order did not prevent further proceedings. In fact, the record is devoid of any evidence that the order on the motion to dismiss is final or appealable. The order itself is for dismissal without prejudice. The plaintiffs, as we've discussed, and as you have all asked questions about, has subsequently refiled their action against the same defendants in the same jurisdiction, raising the exact same claims with the exact same plaintiffs. That case was filed on April 4th, 2014, and this new case has been ongoing for nearly 9 months. For the case, the parties are starting to engage in discovery and moving the case forward to its trial on March 2016. In that case, the homeowners are pursuing all of the remedies available to them in the Coates 1 case.
Counsel, pardon me. Would you agree that the appropriate procedure should have been to stay COATS 1?
If it had been requested, I think there could have been an argument made, but I don't believe the court erred in dismissing or not staying the case because it wasn't requested. And there certainly isn't anything, while Sodara does contemplate a stay, parties are free to contract, as they did here, to agree to mediate claims prior to initiating an action. There's nothing precluding the parties from, I guess, further building up Sodara or further adding requirements to Sodara, as was done here with respect to mediation provisions.
In arbitration cases, it's pretty routine that cases are stayed pending arbitration. If somebody tries to bring a lawsuit, the case is stayed pending arbitration. So this is not a new concept, is it?
No, it's not a new concept. And I think to the extent, the court wanted to stay it, it could have stayed it for 30 days to allow parties to attempt to mediate. But the court enforced the mediation provisions as they were written and as they were agreed to, and as they were bargained for between the parties. And I think that the lower court was correct in that ruling.
In ruling that it lacked subject matter jurisdiction?
Correct.
Is mediation waivable? What if both parties got together and said, we've tried to settle this, we don't need a mediator, let's just go to trial?
Sure.
That would be waivable, wouldn't it?
Pursuant to the contracts that are at issue in this case, those provisions certainly would have been waivable, and the contracts, as you will see in the briefing, provide procedures in which the parties could agree to waive that. If they did not want to move forward, they could have agreed in writing to waive that provision and waive the mediation requirement.
And of course, subject matter jurisdiction is not waivable, right?
Correct.
So this was not an issue of subject matter jurisdiction?
That's correct. I guess, yeah, by that logic.
Although that's what you argued, though, in the lower court, right? That the court lacked jurisdiction.
Yeah, and the court, what's interesting about the lower court's order is if you look at the actual language of the lower court's order, it says, it noted that the mediation provisions have not divested the court of subject matter jurisdiction, but rather made a dispute not yet ripe for the court until 30 days of good faith mediation. Put another way, I'm reading directly from the court's order, the court can't ultimately have subject matter jurisdiction over this matter. And this is on page 3 of the court's order.
What's the status of the Jensen's claims?
The status of the Jensen's claims...
In the first case.
The first case, they were dismissed pursuant to the court's order. Division defendants did not request their dismissal of those claims in their entirety. The court, I would be presuming what the court's reasoning was behind it. I'm not exactly sure why the court determined that the Jensen's claims all should be dismissed, but those were dismissed in the underlying action or in COATS 1 and now have been reasserted in the COATS 2 action. I'd like to turn to the arguments. I'm still remaining on the jurisdictional issue, but the arguments with respect to the statute of limitations that the homeowners have raised. And again, this record is devoid of any evidence that the homeowner's claims are time-barred in the subsequent action. No depositions have been taken in the new matter sufficient to develop evidence to show that the homeowner's claims are time-barred. Limited written discovery has taken place in the new matter. And unless the homeowners are willing to admit here today that their claims are time-barred as a result of the lower court's dismissal, there are no issues that are right before the court.
Has an answer been filed by the defendants?
Yes, the COATS 2 answer has been filed.
And have they asserted a statute of limitations defense?
Yes, we've asserted a statute of limitations defense.
And is it just a general defense, or is it contending that the statute of limitations expired after the filing of the first action?
Well, it's a little premature, but we, depending on how evidence develops and depending on what type of evidence develops in depositions of the plaintiff homeowners, there is potentially motions for summary judgment that will be filed based on that issue, yes. Now, I know the homeowners have argued in a response to the show cause order that the case of SMLL LLC versus Daly gives this court jurisdiction over this matter. However, again, this case is factually distinguishable from the circumstances here. In SMLL, it was clear from the record that the appellant's claims were barred by the applicable statute of limitations. Nevertheless, it's critical to note that the appellant in SMLL refiled its action, and the parties then briefed the statute of limitations issue, where the second trial court dismissed the action based on statute of limitations grounds. Thus, the appellant in SMLL did not jump the gun by filing an appeal before an order dismissing the subsequent action based on the statute of limitations grounds was issued. Contrast to that to the case that's before you. Here, the homeowners have brought this appeal before the defendants have filed any dispositive motions on the statute of limitations issues, and therefore before any lower court has ruled on the potential motions, and before any appellants have lost their right to proceed with any of their claims based on statute of limitations grounds. Instead, the homeowners have filed this appeal in their own words out of an abundance of caution, considering there is a possibility that the court's dismissal without prejudice time barred an individual homeowner's claims. Now, the homeowners are therefore conceding that the injury that forms the basis of their appeal is speculative and may never occur. And considering that neither a court nor a jury have concluded that any of the appellant's claims are time barred. The SMLL case is instructive in that it demonstrates that the homeowners have jumped the gun in bringing this appeal before any determination has been made regarding whether any of the subject claims are time barred. In fact, at this stage, the homeowners, in their own words, do not concede that the statute of limitations or repose has run on any of the homeowners' claims. This was noted in the response to the order to show cause. It is clear that this controversy is not ripe for adjudication, and that this court would be correct to conclude that it does not have subject matter jurisdiction in this matter. Given those considerations, Vision respectfully requests that this court dismiss the appellant's appeal as not yet ripe for determination on the merits. Barring any questions, I would just conclude by saying that the trial court correctly concluded that the mediation provisions containing the contracts between the homeowners and Vision acted as conditions precedent in which barred the homeowners' claims. We submitted pages of briefing on a number of other issues in this matter. Vision would rest on that briefing and ask the court to uphold the lower court's order. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Mr. Colley made some admissions in his argument there. One, that the mediation provision is waivable, and that is an inconsistent position with what they took in the briefs. And you can go back to the opening brief and probably also on reply that was submitted by homeowners in this case. There's certainly a tribal issue of fact of whether this was waived and whether it became moot after homeowners expressly requested mediation. One other issue that Mr. Colby brought up is that a stay had not been requested in the trial court. And this issue is also briefed extensively by the parties, but I'd like to just briefly address that the district court went out of its way to find that based on the SIDARA, the action had to be dismissed in its entirety. And the parties had not briefed that issue, and if the district court had provided the homeowners opportunity, we certainly would have pointed to the mandatory stay provision. And that's what it is. It's mandatory in SIDARA that if there's any violation, you stay the case, there's no dismissal. And that's why this case is so like Lane v. Urgitis dealing with arbitration provisions.
Mr. Johnson, let me just get the timeline note, because there was a motion to dismiss, the trial court ruled, and then the homeowners filed a motion for reconsideration raising the stay, but before the court ruled, you filed your notice of appeal. Is that the correct chronology?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, so at that point, the trial court was divested of jurisdiction based on the notice of appeal. Is that your understanding?
If we have a final appealable order, then the trial court would be divested of jurisdiction. If it was not a final appealable order, then the district court should have kept its jurisdiction, is my understanding. Which probably led to much of the confusion we have here right now. One other issue I want to bring up, and I appreciate that you all raised, is the Jensen's case. That might be an issue that has an alternative reason to have subject matter jurisdiction in this court, because there is plenty of case law in Colorado that says if the district court puts conditions on a voluntary dismissal, well, that order becomes immediately appealable. And in that case, it was often if the district court awards fees or awards costs to the other party when that wasn't what was stipulated between the parties. And I can follow up with supplemental citations on that law. But that is the law of Colorado, and there might be another reason why this court has jurisdiction to at least hear the Jensen's portion of the appeal.
Counsel, if we dismiss the case because of a lack of final judgment, then the first case remains under your, as I understand your argument, the first case is not dismissed. It remains alive and well, right?
That's my understanding too, Your Honor. And finally, the reason that the statute of limitations could bar the claim and why that this case might have subject matter jurisdiction is that the statute of limitations, as was briefed in the response to the show cause order in construction defect actions, is very different than a car accident case. It's fact intensive. If we don't start with a baseline of when we file a complaint, then it's going to complicate matters much further.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you both for your arguments today. The case will stand submitted, and if an opinion will issue in due course.